This is Radio National, abc.net.au/rn. Amanda Smith with you with Artworks. There's a poem by the Roman poet Catullus that starts, Odi et amo, I hate and I love. It'd have to be about the most succinct statement you can make about how when it comes to matters of the heart, there's always two sides to the story. And it's stories of the heart, of love and hate, that are the subject of this Artworks feature. They come from people who were involved in and affected by the riots that happened in Cronulla in Sydney in 2005, the race riots that became the subject of so much national anxiety. And these stories have been recreated in a performance that's called Stories of Love and Hate. To use ideas about love in particular is an interesting approach, you'd have to say, to getting to the heart of what happened in Cronulla, which is still a fraught and tricky subject. Just this month, the film The Combination, that's also in part about the Cronulla riots, was pulled from cinemas in Sydney for a time because it was provoking violence. The live show, Stories of Love and Hate, played to full houses in the Sydney suburbs of Sutherland and Bankstown for 2 weeks late last year. It managed to get over a few barriers with the unusual style of performance it used, as you'll hear. For Artworks, Nadiat El-Ghorli spent time with those involved in the performance and those who went to the performance to reflect on its impact.
Let's not get too carried away,
Birder. We don't have Anglo-Saxon kids out there raping women in
my
Western.
My grandfather was an old digger, and he used to say to me when we were growing up, listen, shoot one, the rest will run.
Thousands of Anglo-Australians singing Waltzing Matilda while Lebanese youths were being hunted down and bashed at the beachside suburb.
Down your shoulders. Yeah.
I think I like your personality. You always wanted to joke around and laugh. And I don't know, I think...
I was gentle. I was a gentleman.
Yes, you were actually. You used to always open and close the car doors or the house door.
I still do.
Yes, you do. He'd turn up to work to pick me up and he'd have bunches of flowers. Bunches, and I'd be... put them out and go to my girlfriends. Have a look what I got.
Carnations and that.
Yeah. So often you'll still get flowers delivered at work.
My name is Roslyn Odes and I'm the director of Stories of Love and Hate, which is produced by Urban Theatre Projects.
Why did you decide on the events in Cronulla to develop a theatre production?
Well, at the time I was kind of thinking about making a new show using the verbatim headphone technique that I've been exploring for a good 7 years now. And when the Cronulla riots happened, I was quite shocked because there was just so much information from so many sources flying around that I found it really difficult to understand what had happened. And, I just thought it was a compelling opportunity to explore that, to go deeper. I really wanted to know who the real people behind the labels of Lebanese thugs and racist rednecks were. I guess I looked at love as a way of accessing the essence of people and the beauty of people and therefore seeing that we all have beauty and both these areas have, you know, really interesting, eccentric, funny, beautiful people. Definitely my aim was to look at the loves and the unique qualities of both areas or various characters within those areas. And I guess the other angle on the flip side of love and the connection to hate is that, often hate comes from protecting the things we love. I imagine you could, most wars, you could look at the origins, you could argue they were about love or trying to preserve something that you love.
Rosalind Odes on why she chose love as a subject to begin talking about what had happened in Cronulla in 2005. Using headphone verbatim theatre, a technique where actors listen to interviews and repeat what they hear, Rosalind takes the audience on a personal journey into the lives of people who were at the riots in December 2005. So how did she approach the issue of hate with the people she spoke to?
Well, I never interviewed people about what they hated. I only went out to interview about what they loved. But the one thing that links all the stories is that everyone I interviewed was somehow directly affected or involved by the day of the Cronulla riots, which I guess is the hate issue that lurks below the surface of the show. But I definitely just went to seek stories of love. And, the responses varied from... the stories that ended up in the show are a group of boys from Bankstown that absolutely love their cars and love bass, surfers that, you know, love surfing and speak about it in really spiritual terms. I interviewed a couple of beautiful elderly women from the Shire who are part of a little club called the Jelly Bean Minstrel Swimmers. They just love the salt water and open air and life, yeah. I interviewed a Walkley Award-winning photographer who won a Walkley Award for his photos of the train incident. I don't know if people remember that the two young Middle Eastern appearance men were beaten up on the train, and there was some quite striking pictures of these guys being beaten up by like a whole horde of Anglo men. He's very passionate about photography and dreams of being a National Geographic photographer. And I also interviewed the cop that was photographed who saved those two boys' lives, lovely man who's in a very romantic relationship, and I interviewed him and his wife together about their romance, a Lebanese-Australian father whose love for his family is very profound and the extents he would go to for his family, some other boys about friendship, some young girls from Auburn High School one girl in particular who is engaged at 15, and, you know, what that means to her and new love.
Love song dedications on mix. How can we help, Mark?
I think I just like to dedicate a song to my girlfriend of 4 months.
A very special lady, eh?
Yeah.
Do you think about her a lot?
Yeah, I do.
What sort of things go through your mind? Do you think about past meetings or the future for you two?
Oh, just like a lot of things about the future and what will happen in a few years' time. Yeah.
You obviously have very strong feelings for her, Mark. Have you ever been in love before?
Not like this one. She's just really smart and funny.
So you want to make sure she stays in your life?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Bianca.
Well, we're about to put a song on for Bianca tonight to let her know that she's on your mind. And
okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell her?
Yeah, I just want to say that I love her heaps and hope she's happy with who I am and how I do stuff.
You know, there was so much hoo-ha around a certain radio personality in Sydney and their involvement in the riots for kind of stirring up hysteria around, particularly surrounding the beating up of two Aussie lifesavers, you know, Australian icons, and some people directly blame one particular shock jock in particular. And the flip side of that, because I was interested in love, wouldn't it be interesting to draw in a radio personality, another Sydney radio personality who's been around for a long time and is very well known and someone who I admire as well, which is the love god, as he's known on his program, Richard Mercer. So there's a little tribute to Richard Mercer in the show where the cast reenact some phone calls to Richard Mercer to, you know. But it was nice to have like a radio personality in the show just to kind of have that slight reference, those things tied together quite nicely. And it's, yeah, and that's worked well, I think, as a device in the show.
You're listening to Artworks on ABC Radio National. I'm Nadia Tilgawley, and we're looking at Stories of Love and Hate, a theatre production about the lives of people who were at the Cronulla riots. I asked its director, Roslyn Oates, why she chose the headphone verbatim theatre technique to tell the story.
Well, firstly, I'm really interested in hyper-real performance style. That's my fascination as a voice artist, which is my background. you know, I just love vocal mannerisms. Like, I just think it's so interesting. But the reason I think it was an appropriate form to choose for this work is because, you know, it was a very sensitive issue and quite an emotional issue, the Cronulla riots. So it was really important to me that people's stories, when they trusted me with their stories, that they weren't going to be misrepresented. So this technique, it prevents parody. The actors are not allowed, I'm very strict, they're not allowed to emotionally interpret what they hear or intellectually interpret it. They just have to say it exactly as they hear it.
I've lived in Cronulla whole lives. I walked down the beach and I didn't know how to any of them. Because they had
Cronulla,
they had pissed in Cronulla, they hang down the car, we'd have to go rrr. They were pissed anyway,
They would have been down there pissed in the park anyway.
Well, you saw utes with spotlights, roo shooting utes. You know what I mean? Dudes would go pick up and stuff.
Hi, my name is Mohammed Ahmed. I work as an editor for a literary publication called Westside for Bankstown Youth Development Service. I also work as a performer and a writer.
Well, Mohammed, you played several characters in Stories of Love and Hate. What do you do to get prepared?
Obviously we do a lot of vocal training and vocal warm-ups before our show. And I think the number one thing is to, more so than capturing the way the so that we don't overplay it or stereotype it or send it up, I think you just have to kind of play it as Mohammed more than playing it as that person, because I could never really sound like a woman and I could never really sound like a 70-year-old man because I'm not. But I can listen to the voices, to the breaths of that person, to capture more so their essence. And I think that's the trick and to nailing this technique of verbatim style theatre.
Actor Mohammed Ahmed talking about some of the ways he prepares for headphone verbatim theatre performances. Relying only on his voice and the voices of the storytellers he hears, Mohammed believes audiences not only get a real sense of how Australian English is spoken, but that the performance itself forces audiences to abandon their stereotypes.
In the real world, people talk over each other, people make mistakes, people stop, people catch their thoughts, people take things back. People say half a word, people don't finish their sentences. It's quite chaotic the way we really speak. And it's even more chaotic as Australians. Like, Australians are quite crazy with the way they speak and very fast. And there's so many different variations because every community and every culture has their own Australian accent. So I think you get a very strong, accurate portrayal of Australian accents and Australian language and the way Australians literally communicate with each other. And I think this, for the audience, gets them, in one sense, it gets them comfortable with it, and in other ways it gets them uncomfortable because they've never heard language in a show so honest and so accurate. The other thing is, I guess it's a little bit confronting. So, for example, a young Lebanese man playing a girl, an older white male, a person of a different culture, different background, a different gender, it's quite striking. It's like, well, that's... You know, Rosin didn't cast me to play the young Lebanese males. Rosin didn't cast Roderick to play the older white males. What it does is it breaks down all those stereotypes that we give actors first, but also the stereotypes that we give people in general. So an audience, an audience member could go in as a woman, could go in as a white person or a black person or an Arabic person, and then comes out just as a human being, because they have to watch a show where there's 30 different people and all the roles are mixed up. So all of a sudden, you're not, like, I'm not, if I was watching the show, I'm not a Middle Eastern man anymore. I'm not a Lebanese Australian. I'm just a person watching other people play other people.
Verbatim theatre has been around since the 1920s, appearing and disappearing several times over the last century. New South Wales University's Carolyn Wake says the form's re-emergence has usually coincided with changes in technology, although its latest comeback in the 90s seemed to have focused on political issues.
In the case of refugees, it was one of the few ways in which stories could get out of detention centres. Journalists were unable to go in there. People weren't allowed to photograph or video in there, but people did manage to get stories and letters from detention centres, and then they were able to put those into plays. I think the form has immense promise and potential, and that's why I'm so interested in it. But I also think it can have risks, and especially for the participants involved who hand over their stories. And if it's not done with care and sensitivity and consultation, it can result in people feeling what James Thompson calls doubly silenced. Often these plays are kind of presented as giving a voice to the voiceless, a face to the faceless, and they're dealing with marginal or subaltern subjects, for want of a better word. And so when practitioners go into a community like that, solicit a story, maybe solicit a dozen stories, and then find that actually only three really work for the play, you've kind of silenced that person yet again. And I think at the other end of the extreme, I think there's kind of extreme collaboration, and when someone is not only a participant and an interviewee, but they then act as themselves. And when they are cast as themselves, again, I think it has immense, you know, potential, but it also has a risk in that people can feel as if they are there to kind of function as a marker of authenticity, or, you know, like, come and see a real live drug addict or a real live, you know, whoever you've interviewed. And I think that has risks attached to it as well. So, you know, as hopeful as I am about the form, I can see that it's not perfect, and in fact, I think occasionally it can be painful and can cause harm.
And it was getting really scary. I thought I was photographing, and I was thinking, this guy is going to die in front of me. And I put the camera down. I put it down. And I just started screaming at him, you know? Get off him! Get off him! You're going to kill him, you know? It's like, as loud as I could. And they just looked up at me for a fraction of a second and said that I was not going to do them, and I wasn't stopping them, you know. I tried to pull off a couple, but they went straight back into it and started kicking this bloke, kept kicking this bloke on the ground. And it was just, there was nothing. I thought this guy's going to die. I just thought there was no stopping him. Then luckily a police officer came in. You know, with his band, old-fashioned style, just belting everyone in this pathway.
Yeah, that's about how it happened.
It was actually the photographer, Craig Greenhill, that was actually up in the top of the carriage, top deck of the carriage, taking photographs, that put the producers of Love and Hate onto me. So I was contacted via my police association, and I was given a phone number to ring, and so I rang up and spoke to the producers, and it just went from there.
That's Craig Campbell, the police officer many remember wielding a baton on Cronulla Railway Station and saving two young men from a violent mob on a train that day. Craig was one of 65 people who were interviewed for the performance by director Roslyn Odes. And although he had some reservations about being involved, verbatim-style theatre seems to have struck a chord with him.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, man at 50, and I haven't even been to a live band. You know, when you have children young, you don't have luxuries like that. But it was different. I actually was listening to it, and I turned to my wife, Jacqueline, and I said, is that us? Because it sounded like, oh, gee, that sounds familiar, what was being said. And my wife turned and said, yeah, it's us. So, yeah, it was very different. I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I think the best part with the way they do that is that what you say in the interview is what gets said on stage. And I think that's very important, that none of that context is changed, because what I said and the way I said it is who I actually am. Like, I mean, people see a police officer and, you know, talk in a certain way and authoritative and things like that, but it's sort of like an automatic thing. You just go into auto mode, and that's the way you do it, because that's the way you're expected to do it. But in an interview, you can be yourself and you can talk the way you talk. I don't know, it's more real. It gives people, the audience, a better understanding about you.
I truthfully believe, as the photographer said, that those two young blokes are going to die there. I don't think they would have stopped stomping on them and kicking them until they were either very, very seriously injured or they were killed. And, my main aim up there was, these two guys aren't going to die, not on my railway station, not on my shift.
Australia's cultural identity and how we negotiate it has inspired several theatre and film productions, the latest of which is the recently released Australian film, The Combination. The film offers us a complex reading of the much maligned Arabic-speaking community in Sydney's West. Likewise, Stories of Love and Hate challenges its audience with uncomfortable facts about the people who became part of a media spectacle. Carolyn Wake.
There's a moment at the end of the play where you hear the original interview piped in over the loudspeaker, and then you hear the actor's repetition of it, and inevitably they're not the same. And so of course it reminds you about theatricality and repetition and mediation, but it also makes visible the labour of listening, which is an invisible labour. And by making the labour of listening visible, it actually kind of shifts responsibility back to more mainstream subjects, such as myself, and, you know, asks you, how do you listen, and to whom do you listen, and when do you listen, and when was the last time you really listened? And it was sort of made all the more poignant, I think, because the quality of listening in that play, you know, contrasts so profoundly with the lack of listening at the heart of Cronulla.
It stood out for me how accurately it portrayed where we're up to in Australia, how kids are feeling, how people are feeling.
You know, it made the people that were in and around that event human, and, you know, they had a range of other things to say and feelings and humour, and this, so we could see them as people. So it sort of it took away that caricature kind of idea of what the Cronulla riots were.
You know, people, and, you know, they shouldn't get into that, you know, small things, conflict and what it is. Just they try to, you know, give the message through to everybody, you know, same and equal. Not that they get into the small things, lead them to conflict.
I like it when a director doesn't seek to completely imitate life, if you know what I mean, but just provides enough information and material there for you to then draw things from. It's like looking at a piece of design, for example, and seeing that there's white space on the page. So it's in those areas that you can actually think about what the rest of it's trying to say to you.
I overheard just then that a group of schoolgirls came today and just were in fits of laughter in recognising people that they know in their everyday life in front of them on the stage, and I think that's fantastic. I think, you know, I do believe that theatre, good theatre, is still a place for all sorts of social issues, political issues, philosophical questions, whatever, to be dealt with or raised, you know, if that's somebody's intention. So, yeah, why not draw on real material?
Audience members after a performance of Stories of Love and Hate in Bankstown. The producers of the show, Urban Theatre Projects, are hoping to tour it later this year. In this Artworks feature, you heard from the show's director, Roslyn Odes, one of the actors, Muhammad Ahmed, Carolyn Wake from the University of New South Wales, and Craig Campbell, the police officer who got caught up in the action, both the Cronulla riots and this play. And this Artworks feature produced by Nadiat El-Ghorli. There's links and photographs for you on the website if you want to check out more. I'm Amanda Smith. This is Radio National, abc.net.au/rn.